listening to Dateline Washington on the Radio America Network. I'm Greg Corumbus. Thanks for being with us. Time now for our weekly visit with John Gizzi, political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. And John, it's always great to be with you.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to be with you, Greg, and a very poignant one at this.
Absolutely true, and we'll talk about that a little bit later in our conversation, but a very busy week politically. Let's start with the situation in Iran. The president was criticized roundly for not being more decisive and more direct with his criticism of how the Iranian regime was handling the unrest in its country. Now the president has come out with stronger language. Is it enough?
Well, the president did come out with stronger language. In fact, he made a surprise cameo appearance in the White House press room earlier in the week and on the same day as his news conference to sharpen the rhetoric. Overall, he's had a very cautious approach to dealing with Iran. And indeed, Chancellor Merkel, arriving at the White House today, said there should be a recount or a revote. The president would not go that far, and when Press Secretary Robert Gibbs was pressed on it later, he would not go as far as the German chancellor did. Clearly, the president is still cautious, albeit getting tougher. And again, we're also finding that President Ahmadinejad, his election still questioned by much of the world, is saying Obama and the United States owe Iran an apology for their meddling in the way they've characterized the government. This is what the president feared the most. It seems as though Mr. Obama cannot have it both ways and is getting it neither way.
John, ultimately, is it good for Obama to be criticized by this Iranian regime, and does it now give him latitude to be much harsher towards them than he had been previously?
Well, again, it may well give him latitude in the sense the president is standing up to Ahmadinejad. On the other hand, I submit to you, when he is not as tough as the German chancellor is in calling for solutions, people notice it. As my colleague Chip Reed of the National Networks did when we were at the White House briefing earlier today. My own feeling on it is that right now we're seeing less and less action in the streets. Mr. Mousavi, the runner-up in the election to Ahmadinejad, who's charging he was robbed, has said he is not afraid of martyrdom and has urged more opposition. But it appears now as though the police are putting down the rioters at this point, and the revolution is subsiding. It may well be another Tiananmen Square, or it may be another 1979 revolution, but it's not happening yet. The drama has yet to play out.
John, the big issue on Capitol Hill today is the energy reform legislation, so-called cap and trade, the big vote in the House of Representatives. Some have said that for moderate Democrats, this is a career killer if they vote in favor of this. What's your sense of what this will do to some of those moderate members if, in fact, they go along with Speaker Pelosi on this bill?
Well, very simply, it's going to lead to an increase in the electricity bills, and as Congressman Glenn Thompson of Pennsylvania said, the war on the poor, because it's lower-income Americans, blue-collar voters, who are going to be hit the hardest, and they, in turn, are going to cause a harsh response to their members of Congress, many of whom happen to be Democrats. President Obama believes this is important. He and German Chancellor Merkel made a strong appeal on the issue of climate control, and according to Mr. Gibbs at the White House briefing, the president is calling members of Congress to try and get some votes for what they consider an historic bill. I'd say in the short run, it may work out for the president, and then if they get cap and trade passed, in the long term, there's going to be some political blood on the floor of the Capitol.
John, just last week, you and I talked about Nevada Senator John Ensign admitting an extramarital affair and how that basically scuttled any hope he had for higher political office. We'll see if it affects his standing in the U.S. Senate. He obviously resigned his leadership position. Just a few days after that, as recently as Wednesday, South Carolina Governor Mark Sanford, another name, perhaps even receiving more speculation about 2012, mysteriously disappeared for several days, then came back. Turns out he was in Argentina with a mistress he'd been involved with for a year and had been close to for about 8 years. Your thoughts on that whole sordid story?
Boy, all I can say is I think Mary Higgins Clark couldn't have written a better thriller on this one. Mark Sanford, very much like Senator Ensign, is someone I've known 15 years. I met the then congressional candidate, Sanford, and his campaign manager wife, Jenny, in 1994. I got to know him well in the House and have stayed in touch with him when he's governor. Clearly, he was someone who, as he put it, believed that the issues of smaller government, less taxes, are what got him out of bed in the morning and motivated him. And he was going to make a run for president on that issue, something that would have put him in a very sharp contrast with Barack Obama. Now it's all dust because of an affair and something that anyone who knew him is surprised and hurt over. These things happen in politics. They come out with the people one least expects, John Ensign and Mark Sanford, and in the end, one has to feel sorry for the family. The only thing I could say is I think his career is finished politically.
A couple of...
In South Carolina, more and more is coming out about using state funds for trips when he saw the mistress, and Republican leaders are calling on him to step down.
And in terms of how that changes the landscape for 2010 in South Carolina, Sanford wasn't going to run again anyway, but who do you see as the front runner, if anyone, at this point for that governor's seat?
Andre Bauer, his lieutenant governor, who may succeed to the top job, is in the political catbird seat. Henry McMaster, the state attorney general, someone who very much wants to run for governor, also there. I'd say either of them are in fighting trim for the next election.
John, just about 60 seconds left in our conversation, and as we've updated our listeners over the past couple of weeks now, this is the final radio version of Dateline Washington. We're continuing the news operation, expanding it, making it better, but bringing it entirely online, and our conversations will continue in that format as well. But over the past 14 years, you have been a weekly guest on this program, and for the last 9.5 years with me, we've gone through an overtime election in 2000, the 9/11 attacks, two wars, and countless political debates. What comes to mind most over those conversations for you?
Well, I think what comes to mind is the fact that we've been able to mesh the political, the breaking news with personal items, whether it was bringing my parents to the White House to meet President Bush during Christmas parties, my baptism as a White House correspondent 6 years ago, what many call my new lease on life, and certainly something that's been a lot of adventures, my marriage in 2002, at the ripe old age of 45, first time, all the while cast against everything from the Clinton impeachment to the election that was so close to so many of the international developments. I've loved every bit of it, as I did with Gene Pell, with Dave Tiwan, and of course with you, Greg Corumbus. And I'd say it's a good run.
It is a good run, and it will continue online, so don't think that these conversations will end. John, thanks as always for your time this week. We'll talk again soon.
As a Radio America enthusiast and someone who was present at the creation, I'm John Gizzi on Capitol Hill.
John Gizzi, political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. This is Dateline Washington.